Okay, thank you all for coming tonight, and welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. Tonight is Tuesday, September 3rd, 2019. We're at the Veterans Memorial Building at 209 Sur Street. If anybody else would like to join us, we have a full contingent tonight, so we have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. Could we please observe a moment of silence? All right, thank you very much. Next, we'll have the Pledge of Allegiance, so could you please stand, face the flag, and ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, do we have any Planning Commissioner announcements that anybody would like to make?
I just want to express my condolences to the lives lost on the Conception and the lives lost in that terrible head-on collision in Paso Robles.
Pretty awful. Okay, anybody else? Okay. So at this point, we open the meeting up for public comment. So if you have something that's not on the agenda, or if you have something that you'd like to address on the consent calendar, or if you can't stay, then please step forward, state your name, and you'll have three minutes to comment. Okay, anybody? Okay, gone. Okay, I'll close public comment and move right on to the consent calendar. We have A1, a current advanced planning and processing list, and that's it. Do we have any comments or questions? Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll move that we accept consent calendar A1.
I'll second.
Okay, motion and second. Any discussion? Nope. Okay, then we'll call the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. We're moving on right on to item number B1. This is a public hearing. Case number CDP-19-021/CUP-19-06 and PKG-19-02 at 1105 Las Tunas Street. And at this point, I'm going to need to recuse myself because of a proximity issue with a piece of property. So I'll shift the meeting over to Michael. Thank you very much.
We have to wait till Commissioner Lohr gets in our soundproof booth out there. Or is out in the parking lot, one or the other. So we'll start with our staff report. That's going to be Willow.
Yes, hello. Good evening, commissioners and residents of Morro Bay. This item that I have before you tonight is a request for a coastal development permit, conditional use permit, and parking exception to add an accessory dwelling unit above an existing nonconforming garage that is attached to a residence with an existing nonconforming front setback at 1105 Las Tunas Street. So the project is located in an R1 zone outside of the appeals jurisdiction, and it is surrounded by R1 on all sides. The existing site is on a corner lot with frontages on both Bella Vista Drive and Las Tunas Street. As you can see in the image, the front yard faces Las Tunas Street and the exterior side yard faces Bella Vista Drive. So a description of the project, county records indicate that the existing single-family residence was constructed in 1959 with minor repairs to the structure since then. The applicant proposes to construct a 476-square-foot accessory dwelling unit above the existing nonconforming 324-square-foot garage that is attached to the existing primary residence. The applicant also proposes to add 150 square feet of second-story decking around the proposed accessory dwelling unit exterior and 155 square feet of storage space on the ground floor attached to the garage. So the existing 952-square-foot primary residence sits 18 feet from the front property line on Las Tunas Street, where 20 feet is the requirement. The structure also sits 10 feet 5 inches from the exterior side yard setback facing Bella Vista Drive, 5 feet 7 inches from the interior side property line, and a little over 18 feet from the rear property line. The existing garage entry also sits 20 feet and 5 inches from the exterior side property line facing Bella Vista Drive to meet that garage entry requirement. And the proposed 476 square foot accessory dwelling unit will project over the garage entry at 18 feet and 4 inches from the exterior side yard property facing Bella Vista. The proposed second story deck posts will remain outside of the required 10 foot setback at 10 feet and 5 inches. So to address these nonconformities a little further, the project is nonconforming with regards to the front setback and the interior garage width. No work is proposed in the area of nonconformance. The project will be required to obtain a building permit to ensure its compliance with Title 14. The project will not impair the character of the zone. And lastly, major reconstruction would be required to make the project conforming to today's standards. So moving on to the parking exception, staff has found that the project meets the requirements for a parking exception by making the following findings, that the parking exception will not be a grant of special privilege and will be able to accommodate all the parking needs on the site, that the exception will not adversely affect the health, safety, or general welfare of the public, and no traffic safety problems will result from the proposed modification, as no changes to the current parking situation are proposed. And lastly, that the exception is reasonably necessary for the applicant's full enjoyment of uses similar in those surrounding in the surrounding neighborhood, as there are similar parking arrangements in the vicinity and citywide. As for parking requirements for the accessory dwelling unit, pursuant to updates in California state law, parking is no longer required for accessory dwelling unit projects within a half mile of a transit stop. All residences in Morro Bay are located within a half mile of a transit stop. Therefore, no additional on-site parking for the ADU is required. Here is an image of the proposed site plan that shows the home and proposed ADU building footprint in relation to the overall site. This includes the exterior decking and the open and uncovered parking space in the driveway associated with this parking exception. These are the proposed elevations of the home to give a better idea of what the addition would look like from every angle. And this is an image of the photo simulation provided by the architect to show what the project would look like in relation to the neighboring home. As shown here, the second story addition is located on the back half of the lot to minimize the appearance from Las Tunas, which I will talk about more in the next slide. Residential design guidelines. We found that the project is consistent with the council adopted residential design guidelines in the following ways. Relationship to existing homes, as the overall color scheme and design will remain the same, and there are two-story developments directly adjacent to the project. Scale and mass, as the second story is limited to the back half of the lot and will not negatively impact the view from either Las Tunas Street or Bella Vista Drive. Surface articulation, as the proposed addition will use similar colors, materials, and design elements as those on the primary residence. Garage and driveway design, as the front entryway is the most pronounced feature on the front elevation facing Las Tunas Street, and the accessory dwelling unit will add visual interest above the existing garage entry. Building materials, as the proposed addition will once again use the same colors, materials, and design elements as the existing primary residence. Architectural elements, as the doors, windows, and other architectural features will be consistent with the design of the overall home. So with all that said, this item was noticed as required in the San Luis Obispo Tribune newspaper on the 23rd of August, and the property owners and occupants of record within 500 feet were duly noticed and invited to attend tonight's meeting. Therefore, it is staff's recommendation that the Planning Commission conditionally approve Coastal Development Permit Number CDP 19-021, Conditional Use Permit Number CUP 19-06, and Parking Exception Number 19-02, subject to the findings and conditions of approval outlined in Resolution 21-19. Thank you.
Okay, great. I'll ask my colleagues if they have any, if they had any additional information or meetings or things. Okay, fine. So at this point, we have the applicant or their agent give a presentation as we open up the public hearing. So do we have the applicant or their agent? There we go. Great. Thanks. Just tell us your name and for the record.
My name is Tim Beecher, architect of record for the project. I wasn't aware of presentation beyond what has been given, but I am here for any questions that may arise.
Okay, so at that point, you can sit down. We'll continue with the public hearing, and we may ask you to come back up if we have questions after we're done. So at this point, we'll open up the public hearing to any of the audience who'd like to come and speak. Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Do we have any questions for staff or for the applicant?
I have a Jesse. Very general question for staff that applies but doesn't apply to this project, if I may.
Sure.
So I realize that this is 50% of the existing residents, and that's a maximum, I imagine.
Yes.
Are we proposing any changes to Title 14 and the new code adoption that would allow that to be increased, or is it still going to remain 50% maximum?
As it stands right now, we're keeping it at 50%. We're not making any changes at this point.
I guess the only question I had, maybe you can speak to it as a designer, if you want to come back up. I guess with the additional storage that's being built, did you look at taking the garage down and actually making a conforming garage to solve that problem?
No, I didn't. In fact, I wasn't aware that it was a non-conforming garage until after submitting it for planning. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we might have. Other than that, cost-wise, it would have added a considerable amount to... Mm-hmm. redo that structure, and mm-hmm. budget is a consideration.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other thing I was going to ask is staff talked about they felt that the surface articulation was adequate, and I'm noticing there's no articulation around the windows at all. It's stucco with the window just kind of put in, so there's no trim of any kind or relief around the windows. It's kind of a very minimal approach.
Actually, There will be a detail where the windows will be inset 2 inches from the exterior surface, and that gets stuccoed around mm-hmm. that whole recess.
So there's some depth associated
right.
with the facade.
It's they're 2x6 studs, so it partly to allow that.
Okay.
Mostly
for
insulation.
That's not really clear on there, and I think one of the issues I would see is that the project is so small, it doesn't get to the point that some of those details are maybe as critical if we had a simpler, larger footprint we were dealing with, because I think there's enough between the walkways and the railings and the roof articulation, there's probably enough changes in the building that it's not going to appear large or out of scale, in my opinion, at least. So I think that's
okay.
Yeah. Anybody have any other questions? Statements, comments?
Just my usual comment about I hope in the future we have sufficient resources to monitor these accessory dwelling units to make sure that they don't become short-term vacation rentals. That's all.
And I will continue my crusade to change Title 14 so that this project would have triggered fire sprinklers, but I realize it doesn't.
So a couple of responses to commissioner comments. We are in the process of hiring an outside firm to monitor vacation rentals in the city. I'm working on a contract right now, so that'll help us through the monitoring and making sure we have good actors in town for the ones that we license. And to Commissioner Barone's comments, I just met this morning with the fire department and our building inspector and plans examiner, and went over options for reducing the square footage additions that would trigger the requirement for sprinklers. Sprinklers are important. We feel they're important internally on the staff side of things, and so we are looking to reduce the square footage additions that would trigger that requirement. So you'll be happy to know that.
I go herd.
Okay, so at this point, I'll look to my colleagues and ask if anybody has a motion at this point.
Sure, I'll move that we conditionally approve Coastal Development Permit CDP 19-021, Conditional Use Permit CUP 19-06, and Parking Exception PKG 19-02, with the conditions as detailed.
I'll second. Or Joe will second, either way.
We'll let you pick the seconder.
I'll second it.
Okay, so why don't you call the question?
Okay. Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart?
Aye.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
Commissioner Ingraffia?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. I'll turn the chair back over to... thank you. Turn the chair back over to Commissioner Lure here.
There must have been a light in the soundproof room.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Lucas. I was watching on the monitor, and I must say that was the best I've looked all year. Okay, so moving on, we have item number B2. It's case number TRE19-068. So I assume that's tree. And site location is 445 Main Street, 455 Main Street, Morro Bay. Are we ready with the staff report?
We're waiting on getting the presentation up.
Okay, great. While they're doing that, do we have any ex parte communications?
I have spoken to Betty Winholtz, not about this, but I've spoken to Betty Winholtz extensively recently. So
just, and I had a couple words out in the lobby with a member of the audience here. So
anybody else? And I spoke to one of the residents actually before it even showed up on the agenda, but he knew it was coming up, so had some discussions about it.
Okay. Do we have our technical background up?
I think we're ready, yes.
Please come forward, and we'll open up public comment just for this one comment here.
Thank you. Ms. Winholtz had to teach today as a fill-in teacher that she wasn't expecting, and so she's supposed to be here at 6:30. Is it possible that we could hold off on the second item until that time?
Okay, thank you for your
question.
We'll close public comment. I think we'll go ahead, and I think she's fully aware of the issues here. So I think, you know, if it's okay with the rest of the commission, I think we'll go ahead and if she arrives about 6:30, we'll open up public comment so she can have her comment at that point. Is everybody good with that?
That seems fair, as long as she's able to speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so...
Was that the end of public comment?
No. We're gonna open it up first. We're just trying to be a little accommodating, and maybe we shouldn't, but... So we'll have staff report, then we'll have public comment for this item.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, Planning Commission and public. Tonight we have an appeal of an administrative tree permit removal, the removal of two trees in a public right-of-way located near 445 and 455 Main Street. The appellant is...
Excuse me, is your microphone on?
Yes.
Is it too far away?
Sorry. Okay, thank you.
The appellant is Betty Winholtz and Nancy Best. The applicant is the Morrow Cove HOA, represented by Lori Park and Phil Hornberg. Sorry. So administrative tree permit removal is the director has the authority to deny or approve a tree permit removal pursuant to Morrow Bay Municipal Code 12.08.070. The Planning Commission's functions and duty are to uphold or deny the appeal, reprimand the project back to staff for re-review, or continue to a certain date certain and provide direction. Morrow Bay Municipal Code Section 12.08.070 is a tree removal. No trees shall be removed from the public right-of-way unless it interferes with the necessary improvements of the public right-of-way, the installation of public utilities, or is a hazard to persons or property outside the drip line of the tree at maturity, or creates such a condition as to constitute a hazard or an impediment to the progress or vision of anyone traveling within the public right-of-way. If in the opinion of the Director of Public Services, a tree is determined to meet the above criteria, posted for a minimum of 10 days, and all property owners and residents within 300 feet are notified of the schedule of removal. Administrative tree removal permit was applied for on May 13, 2019, for the removal and replacement of two trees within the public right-of-way. The removal request was reviewed by staff, and two trees were posted for removal on June 20th, 2019. An appeal was filed on June 29th, 2019. This is some pictures of the existing site of Morrow Cove subdivision. The area we're talking about is there on Main Street, and there's a view of the right-of-way looking north and looking south. So the removal request, Morrow Cove HOA entered into an agreement for Adopt Morrow Bay agreement with the city in September of 2018. This agreement allows the volunteers to perform maintenance in the city's right-of-way. These trees are still considered public trees, and the liability of these trees still falls within the city's jurisdiction. The removal process also must follow the Morrow Bay Municipal Code 12.08. The removal request submitted came with two arborist reports provided. The reports highlighted the trees having narrow crotch angles with included bark and spiraling roots. Also, plans to re-landscape the entire planter area along Main Street between South and Olive was also submitted. The Morrow Cove HOA plans to revitalize the landscape and redo the irrigation in this area. Currently, there is drip and overhead sprinklers. Much of the irrigation is in need of repair, and the overhead sprinklers tend to waste the water by overspray. The HOA pays for the irrigation in this area, and their submitted plans show a 50% reduction in water use. So this is a proposed elevation of what they would like to do in that area. The plan proposes to remove the Melaleuca trees and replace them with Catalina cherry and Toyon trees. Both of these types of trees are listed on the city's master tree list. The rest of the landscaping in the area will be an array of low-growing, water-wise plants. And then here's the whole view from Morrow along Main from South to Olive. It's kind of hard to see on there, but it was included in your packet, so you could see. Excuse me. The submitted arborist reports state that there's inherent issues with these trees. The trees have narrowed, angled branches with included bark, creating a wedge in the crotch of the branches. The Greenville arborist report states, heavy canopy weight leverages these angles, and the combination of weight leverage and wedge in the included bark will mean the limbs will break. This is not a matter of if, but a matter of when. The report also goes on to state that the roots in the trees have issues as well. The roots on these trees tend to be very aggressive and surface rooted. When the trees were planted, they were planted with the root barrier to attempt to make the roots go down and minimize the sidewalk damage. Unfortunately, these trees are surface rooted and the roots did not go down. They went spiraling around the base of the tree. The Greenville Arborist Report states the spiraling roots eventually act as a rope around the base of the tree base of the growing, expanding trunk. In turn, the roots begin to restrict and cut off the circulation of the tree. They also have heavy clustered or root-bound directly below the trunk, which makes it unstable when pushing against the wind. Both the girdling and the root bound of these conditions is dooming the tree to decline in wind throw. So the city has experienced the same kind of issues with these trees in this location. Above on the two left pictures is a picture of a tree that is leaning after a windstorm. It's evident that the spiraling roots of this picture of this tree was caused to lean from the wind throw. The trees ended up falling over before the city could remove it. So far, there's been two trees that have fallen over due to wind throw. The other picture is another tree where the branch broke over the homeowner's walkway of the Morocco subdivision. This was due to the narrow-angled branches. So the appellants, Betty Winholtz and Nancy Bass, submitted the appeal on June 29th within the 10-day appeal period. The appellants stated as follows. By appearance, the two trees look healthy and no different than the other five paper bark tea tree Melaleucas trees planted along the 400 block of Main. The trees were planted as part of the subdivision's conditions of approval. Paper bark trees are listed on the city's master tree list. They are not tall trees, can easily be trimmed, and do not have pods for tripping. The sidewalk is not lifted up around them. Is this precedent for cutting the other tea trees? So staff's response is, the submitted arborist report describes the issues with these Melaleuca trees, the structural issues with these Melaleuca trees. The city has experienced the same structural issues with the other Melaleuca trees planted in the same area. The structural issues have led to hazardous conditions in the past. Therefore, the Director of Public Works had the tree posted for removal. Appeal requests and relief of action. Do not remove the tree. Demonstrate through a licensed arborist report that the trees are a hazard, impediment, dangerous, and cannot be trimmed or braced. If it can be determined, then the trees must be replaced immediately. The applicant did provide two arborist reports highlighting the structural hazards. Additionally, the arborist report states that at this point, this condition is not correctable. The applicant does plan to replace the trees with appropriate trees from the city's master tree list. Therefore, in conclusion, staff recommends to deny the appeal and uphold the director's approval for case number TRE 19-068, the removal of two public trees in the right-of-way at 445 and 455 Main Street by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 2019. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Do we have any questions for staff first? Joseph? Okay. Jesse?
Are the paper bark trees no longer on the city's tree list?
They still are on the city tree list.
Michael? Susan? Okay. Couple questions I have. One was Jesse's question. And then also, are there other tea trees in the Melaleucas in this block, correct?
In this lot, there may be some in the front yards. Those aren't city trees. We have them in different places all over town. Mm-hmm. I think the problem with these is the root barrier that was put around them really kind of strangled those trees and made it difficult. And we have them down even at Tylands Park below, but they're kept a lot smaller. So the maintenance is a little differently there.
Okay. And so they're planning to re-landscape that whole area on Main Street, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right, then at this point we'll open it up for a public comment, and typically we have the appellate come forward and give their presentation. Would you please come forward?
Is that the HOA or us?
Pardon?
Okay.
Yeah. So please state your name and
I'm Nancy Bast, a 41-year resident of Morro Bay. I was on the defunct street and tree advisory board in the 90s. During that time, Morro Bay achieved status as a tree city. The board reviewed not only public street trees, but at that time, the ordinance dealt with tree removal and replacement on private property. It was the private property aspect that caused the new mayor to disband the board and rescind any oversight of trees on private property. There are half a dozen different climate zones in Morro Bay that require trees be selected for each zone's conditions if the trees are to thrive. Paper bark trees are about the only tree to thrive in all zones, as illustrated by the photos taken of them in every area of Morro Bay, even the cruel salt wind conditions on North Main Street, where there are 26 paper bark trees between Highway 41 and Buena Vista, Yerba Buena. They also thrive in all soil conditions, silt, clay, sand, etc. They are extremely drought tolerant, thriving without irrigation, as shown in many of the photos. They are attractive to birds for roosting and nesting because of their dense canopy, a necessary feature of trees if Morro Bay truthfully qualifies as a bird sanctuary. They take pruning, often to preserve viewshed, even severe pruning without losing vibrancy or dying off. When in bloom, they are a rich source of nectar to many species of trees and are attractive to pollinators that are increasingly in danger of extinction. They are exceptionally aesthetic because of their unique layered textured bark. They are architectural trees, meaning they can be planted next to walls and structures without damage, as shown in photos of the Bayshore Bluff subdivision in South Morro Bay, where 22 paper bark trees, decades old, are creating a lush environment throughout the interior of the complex as well as on the windy seaward side. 10 mature paper bark trees beautify the low-income Sequoia apartments in North Morro Bay. To specifically address the arborist's reports, it must be said that arborists would not remain in business long if they did not report the desired findings for which they were hired. The two paper bark trees that fell in January and February of 2017 were among many trees uprooted or damaged during the severe storms that rained over 2 inches on January 4th and 3 inches on February 18th. The 2 months total of 16 inches were 3 times normal rainfall. At that time, the Pfeiffer Canyon Bridge collapsed and the huge mudslide below Gorda closed the Highway 1 for 1 year. Harbor dredging scheduled to start in January was delayed until late February because of the weather. Arborist statements that cracking and lifting of walkways proves to be specious when seeing photos of the 8 mature paper bark trees growing in the cramped space between undamaged curbs in the Del Mar School parking lot. Both arborist reports claim that narrow crotches inevitably cause rot and breaking, a claim challenged by the many photos that show venerable trees with narrow crotches enduring intact for years. Arborists report other plant material is crowded out by paper bark roots, but is contrary to what is shown in many of the photos. That paper bark trees are vulnerable to termites and insects is opposite to research found on the internet, wherein landscape professionals state paper bark trees are, quote, resistant to termites and oil of paper bark is used as mosquito repellent, unquote. It seems clear that the public paper bark trees at Morro Cove have been overwatered using an above-ground spray system, causing more surface roots than normal for that tree. The solution is to stop watering them and remove the plastic root barriers. These established mature trees, including the pines, require no irrigation, whereas new replacement trees will be water-intensive until well-established in 2 to 3 years. It is notable that it has been 2.5 years since a removal of the two fallen trees, but no replacement trees have been planted. Perhaps that is where to start with the proposed replacement trees. Catalina cherry is a good replacement choice to add diversity, color, and texture. However, Toyon's sprawling open growth habitat would require frequent pruning, otherwise encroachment of limbs over the sidewalk would make pedestrian passage difficult. The paper bark trees growing at Morro Cove appear to be no different than the same species of healthy trees growing throughout Morro Bay. I don't need to remind anyone that preservation of mature and planting of large trees that scrub the air of climate-changing CO2 are invaluable. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Please, anybody else, please come forward.
I'm the other half of 10 minutes. Okay. My name is Betty Winholz. Without being identified as such, this appeal is not only about two healthy trees, but a precedent-setting policy change in how Morro Bay public trees will be handled. What the HOA asks for and staff recommends is taking decision-making authority over the removal of certain public trees away from the Planning Commission, where public input is received, and give it to private, in this case, HOA or adjacent homeowners. Public trees do not belong to adjacent property owners, even if they pay the water bill. Rather, these public trees were offered as a public benefit condition for developing the subdivision. That's what happened at Morro Cove. It was a condition of approval. These particular trees were selected purposely and specifically. As the city's adopted Urban Forest Management Plan mission statement says, public trees belong to all of us. They are for the enjoyment of all, to beautify the city, to create a stable and mature urban canopy. Public trees benefit everyone: walkers, bikers, drivers, locals, visitors. When a group adopts a public park or place, their job is to keep it litter-free. I know that from being a member of Morro Bay Beautiful, who adopted Tidelands Park and the Sandspit. Subsequently, Morro Bay and Bloom adopted the roundabout. It transitioned into planting new flower beds quarterly. However, they do not control the public tree surrounding the roundabout, as far as I know. Now, this Adopt-a-Park group before you tonight is going a step further, asking for and being granted the right to modify major public vegetation. This appeal is not just about two trees, but all 8 public trees, as stated in your staff report, which is the full length of a block on the busiest north-south thoroughfare in the city. The reasons given to justify the public tree removal are 3: to put in a drip system, to redo the landscaping, and because it's a hazard. I believe that Ms. Bass has challenged this last condition with what you have seen here tonight. So who's going to uphold the city law? Because Municipal Code 12.08.07 states, no tree shall be removed from a public right-of-way unless it's necessary for the improvement of the right-of-way, or because there's an installation of public utilities, or it's a hazard to person, or it stops it impedes the vision of anyone traveling. This project does not meet any of these 4 municipal criteria. If indeed the residents feel there is a hazard, then they need to stop watering and prune. Trimming and or bracing are the correct next steps, not the final solution of removal. And what of the 2 pines? They don't fit any criteria, not even the hazard. Your decision on this appeal will be precedent-setting. Because if you turn the fate of public trees over to a private entity instead of keeping it with the public, and if you ignore that this is about more than 2 specific trees,
when it is really about a premeditated plan to remove all the trees, as stated in the staff report. And if you concur that it is acceptable to remove healthy public trees for the sake of re-landscaping and redoing a water system. As you know, the Cloisters residential landscaping has been contentious for years. How will you justify not granting the Cloisters HOA the same benefit of cutting down their trees when they come to you, and they will after they hear the decision tonight? You'll be setting a binding precedent for future planning commissions when in a few years the HOA that is attached to the Panorama build-out comes and asks for its trees to be removed, or the old Texaco property build-out asks for its trees to be removed, or the current Morro Mist project on North Main Street comes and asks. That is why all tree removal decisions must remain with this body, the Planning Commission, because the Planning Commission is not self-serving, but serves the community as a whole, just as trees do.
Thank you very much. Okay, anybody else, please come forward.
Good evening. My name is Roger Ewing, Morro Bay resident. I've been asked to read comments for the record by Mr. Gary Broering, 48-year resident of Morro Bay and a retired landscape contractor for 40 years in San Luis Obispo County. And his comments are, "It saddens me to hear of the possible impending removal of the established Melaleucas along the west side of Main Street, from Olive Street back towards town. Aside from the fact that these trees provide habitat for birds, bees, butterflies, and other beneficial insects, these trees also provide a visual and sound barrier between the traffic and the homes. They are relatively clean, they do not tear up the sidewalk, and because they are established, they require infrequent watering. In order to remove them for replacement and replanting, either the city or the homeowners association will have to incur great expense. Removing sections of sidewalk, possibly curb and gutter, and they run the risk of damaging the retaining wall between the street level and the houses below. Commissioners, this will be very expensive. For either a cash-strapped city or a homeowners association that will not want to pay. After the reinstallation, there will be a 2 to 3 year period of regular watering, weeding, and post-installation maintenance to guarantee that these new trees will be healthy and drought-tolerant well into the future. By anyone's standard, this is not a sound plan, either fiscally or for the street tree maintenance. And on behalf of Gary Borrowing, I say thank you for letting me read his comments into the record. And as an aside and as a private citizen, I would like to lend my support to Ms. Bast and Ms. Windhol's appeal. I do believe we are a tree city, and I would like Morro Bay to remain a tree city. And I think removing trees for aesthetic reasons is not what we should be doing tonight. Thank you for listening, and have a good meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
Melody DeMeritt, former council person, and I know how these deals get done because we did plenty when I was on council. People want to cut down trees, and then they are conditioned to put in trees. Those trees cannot be taken out now because of the law, the contract that the developer made with this city. A little history. Many of you, at least three of you up there, have lived here long enough to know what was there before there was this development. There were over 100 eucalyptus trees, and the big red barn building in the middle with the big turret that went up, all demolished, taken away, cut down, torn up, pulled pulled out by the roots while butterflies were nesting in them. That project was so controversial and kept getting modified and modified by the developer, and we kept chasing them down. Put these trees in. Do you promise to put these trees in? Only to have 20 years later, the people that live there who don't know about the deal, who don't know about the history of that area, want to cut them down. Now, I have to say, I looked at the pictures that the applicant put up there, and my paper tree does not look like that. I have watched my paper tree through storms. Where's your timer here? Isn't there a timer?
Yes, that's got a minute 30.
Down there where a speaker can't see it.
Yes.
Brilliant.
I'll give you a warning.
Thanks. I have stood at the bedroom window and looked out at that paper tree during that storm that Nancy was talking about with all the rain. And the wind blew. There's nothing that stops a storm coming at us from Alaska, from the north. Nothing stops us, anything from it, if we live up on a hill. And that paper tree simply stood there, leaning towards my house, and just stood there. For 26 years, that paper bark tree has been there. All you have to do is care for the damn thing. Yes, I get gardeners in to prune it. They have to be de-limbed a bit to take the weight off from the house. They have to be not watered. I don't water my paper bark tree at all. And yet they've put these little flower beds around them. So obviously they're getting too much water. Take the flower beds up. Put in some succulents. You know, stop over-watering. We're in a drought still. So I support keeping these trees. We are a tree city. I have birds, butterflies, and hummingbirds and bees that love my paper bark tree. They love all paper bark trees. Please preserve these trees. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
Good evening. I'm Phil Hornberg, and I'm president of the Morro Cove Homeowners Association. We obviously didn't. We inherited this situation, and as you may know, these trees were originally supposed to be in the sidewalk, and that's where they probably should have been, but that wouldn't have worked out aesthetically. It would have been where people go. So there was an arrangement that was made, and those trees are put in this area between the sidewalk and our retaining wall. That, according to the Morro Cove Homeowners Association, is common area. That is owned by all 30 of the homeowners that are living there. We know that under the Department of Real Estate, California Department of Real Estate, that we have the responsibility to maintain that area. We're assessed monies each and every month to maintain that area. The problem is, you got trees now in there. The trees are owned by the city. The city went through and made a survey, and each tree is tagged, and it says City of Morro Bay tree. We can't touch those trees, or that's what we were told. They could only be touched by the city. And unfortunately, the city doesn't have money, and so they weren't able to go out and prune them to do anything to them. So that left these trees to grow with our landscaping. The trees, as you saw, were planted improperly. That's my estimation. The root barriers didn't work. They allowed this girdling effect. The trees became unstable to an extent that two of them have fallen over. They could have killed somebody. They came close to injuring one of our members' homes and their son, who was home. He just was walking away from the tree when it fell. If that isn't a hazard, I don't know what is. We've got a dangerous situation here. and it is all the along that strip. It's something that we can't do anything about until we finally learned that the city didn't have the money. So we applied when we were adopting the park, the Bluff Park, which we maintain, but we were adopting the park up on or the strip along the main street, and we are finally allowed to trim the trees. That was last year. That was the first time that we were allowed to trim the trees. We did that, and it has stabled them so they're not turning. But like the lady said, any wind, any storm, those trees are going to go over. So we're trying to do the best we can under the circumstance. It's not only to protect our homeowners, but the city itself. I mean, the city's got the responsibility. They have the liability for those trees. And we've had two trees fall already out of not that many. That's a huge percentage. Also, we have two arborists, certified arborists, that say that the trees are dangerous and they're a hazard. And even Mrs. Winholtz, in her appeal, says, do not remove these trees, but demonstrate through a licensed arborist report that these trees are a hazard, impediment, dangerous, cannot be trimmed or traced. If it can be demonstrated, then they must be replaced immediately. That's her words. We've got two arborists. We've got two trees down. We need some help to be able to take care of the situation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next, please. Please come forward.
Richard Lehman. I'm the treasurer of the Homeowners Association. And I just have a point of clarification that's our common area. But should a tree fall on a car that's parked or a person or fall on our retaining wall and fence or fall on one of our members' house, I'd like to have the minute show that the city is responsible for that. I have to plan to indemnify the Homeowners Association if we're liable. So I'd like an explanation of that and put in the minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. Would the next speaker, please?
Good evening, Planning Commissioners. I'm Ed Krovitz, and I live at 451 Main Street, which is right next door to the tree in question. I saw in front of my house, the city's already removed one tree that fell over. I called the city. Before they could get there, the tree fell over. They're dangerous, trust me. These trees are not the same types of trees or the same types, but they're not in the same situation of the other paper bark trees that were mentioned. These are in distinct locations that are causing problems. And I want to compliment the city or whoever put this staff report together because it's quite complete, and I agree with it completely. One issue that wasn't mentioned that I'm very concerned about, and that is from Olive Street to South Street, there's a retaining wall in front of 10 homes. These homes are in excess of probably $800,000 to $900,000. We're looking at maybe $9 million of property that are being protected by this wall. These roots are in question, could and probably will, if they stay there, damage this wall. The sidewalk's been cracking. The trees are leaning. If that wall fails, the integrity of all those homes, the integrity of that wall is what's ensuring those homes' value right now. There'll be a great deal of property damage if that wall does go down. So I would like you to deny the appeal and let us do a very good job for the city in planting that on Main Street. It'll look much better. It'll be safer for the city, safer for our homeowners, and it'll be a much better situation than it is now. So please deny the appeal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next speaker, please come forward.
My name's Lori Park. I'm secretary of the HOA. I just want to acknowledge that we understand there was a lot of animosity with this initial development. We are trying to work with the circumstances we currently have. I personally feel, and it was verified by two different arborists, that the base problem here is that those trees were not planted correctly. They were probably lowest price, root-bound stock to begin with. Then they were planted with a small root barrier right around the circumference of the root ball. From the two trees that have fallen over already, it was noticed that the roots were not substantially intact. They were still in a ball. One homeowner said it looked as if it had just been potted in the plant and it had just tipped over. There was no infrastructure there to hold that tree up. Me personally, and I've done a survey of all of our homeowners, we love the trees. We do not want to get rid of trees. We appreciate living in Tree City, USA. What we're trying to do is look at the long term. One of the reasons that we're looking at this is because our irrigation system has to be replaced. We don't want to use any more water than necessary, and it's currently a bubble and spray irrigation system. We want to convert to a drip system. We've held off the re-landscaping for over a year now because we wanted some resolution on what is going to happen with these trees. We don't want to go through spending all the money to put in the landscaping and then have one tree at a time fall over and ruin the landscaping, or to later say they're all a problem, we need to take them all out right after putting in new landscaping. So what we're trying to do is go at this in an orderly fashion and use common sense, and we hired a landscape architect to come up with a design that would benefit the homeowners and the community. And I think I'm hearing from some of the prior speakers that part of the issue is what trees that we're planning to replace with. So we don't really have anything against the paper bark melaleuca. We were picking trees that were on the city's list, and we're open to discussion if the species of the tree planted is an issue. Other than that, we're just trying to move forward, but do it in an orderly fashion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further speakers? Anybody else wish to speak to this item? Okay. Seeing that, I'll bring it back to the commission. Are there questions for the appellate?
Actually,
my question is not for the staff.
Okay, that's great.
So to be clear, despite suggestions that this is really a plan to remove all of the trees at that 400 block, this appeal only addresses two trees, the removal of two trees.
This appeal is just those two trees. To remove the other ones, they would have to be posted and go through the same process.
And then the other question is, I would suppose the implication is that all the trees were examined. Two trees have been found to be damaged and, or certainly not thriving. But at this point, the other trees are reasonably healthy or certainly not a danger. Is that correct?
All of the trees exhibited some of these issues. So they do plan on removing all of them. They were going to do it as a phased approach, thinking that it would save them some money, I think, in the beginning. But they found out it actually probably will end up costing them quite a bit more to do it in a segment instead of just kind of doing everything. But we did post two now, to try to remove two and then move on from there. But all of them are addressed in the arborist report. All of the melaleucas, they didn't specify that, you know, these two were worse. All the melaleucas have the same kind of girdling issue in the branch.
Right. I'm just sort of wrestling with the notion of there is a distinction between a tree not thriving and a tree being a danger. At least in my mind, there is.
Jesse, do you have staff or?
Well, yes, but I have more questions now based on that response.
Yes.
So the the long-term plan is to remove them all.
Yes.
And they intend to redo the landscaping soon. It sounded like that was their intention. So wouldn't they need to remove the mulch now to redo the landscaping?
Yeah, from what I understand, they after they talked to the landscaper, they can't redo the irrigation with the trees still there with all the roots in the way and everything. And so doing it in that phased approach would be very difficult or very expensive on them.
And the city would oppose removing them all?
Well, the
once?
Arborist report supported the removal of all of them, so we could post the rest of them, depending on, you know, if they wanted to do that or not.
Is that a stance the staff would support?
The arborist report really didn't define that, you know, any of those melaleucas were not hazardous. They all had the same kind of issues. So if we supported those two, I would see that we would support the other removals as well.
So kind of big picture, and maybe I'm getting off topic, I'm getting too direct here, but would the city support completely removing all of the paper barks and replacing them with paper barks with appropriately rooted paper bark? I mean, it seems like that would win. That's a win-win. I mean, I know that it'll take a lot of years for them to come back, but if that's where we're going to end up anyway, and, you know, 10 years from now, we at least have the paper bark. So anyway, I'm sorry.
I mean, you're asking whether we would support that. Yeah, all of the trees that they proposed and the paper bark are on the street tree list. So we would, you know, we would support any of those trees.
Okay. Susan? Questions for staff or appellate?
So that does open that can of worms and answers the question about, is it two trees or is it all the trees? So I did walk the area. I did notice that strange little girding of all the roots, and they are kind of a tangled mess. I did not really notice problems in the sidewalk, certainly relative to what we see on Morro Bay Boulevard, for example, where the red gum eucalyptus are really wreaking havoc with everything. And I wondered, in terms of the retaining wall, a lot of it had ivy over it. So did anybody look underneath the ivy to see if there's damage to the retaining wall?
I have not. I don't know if the arborist report did or didn't address it.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
I know the city looked at the sidewalks, too, and they didn't seem damaged from that. That wasn't one of our reasons for removal.
Okay. So I think that's it.
Okay, Michael?
Maybe staff can clarify this issue of liability. Is the city liable for the decision on the trees?
Yeah. Yes, the city is still liable for the trees. They're still public trees. That's why they get posted the way they do. Any of them being removed would follow that process.
And so anything that they plant is going to be a city tree.
Correct.
So the care of the city trees is the city obligation?
Correct, but they have adopted that area, so they would be caring for them.
Okay.
And through the Adopt Morro Bay agreement they have.
Okay, Susan?
So if they were to remove two trees, it sounds like they really couldn't start their re-landscaping process and the change in irrigation until all the trees are gone. So you wouldn't see two trees replaced when the two trees come out.
I mean, you could ask them. I'm not exactly 100% sure. I mean, that's okay. The way I understood that they were going to, but then they came back with the landscaper.
Yeah. Because there's a... So. They're pretty spectacular-looking trees, although, you know, I understand there can be some problems, and those roots did look really weird. I also see, like in places like the downtown, where we have a tree stock that is all of an age. So, and some of them are really problematic, some less so. It would be lovely to have a plan where you're replacing trees on a more staggered basis so you don't, you know, just have this desert and then plant baby trees that may or may not survive. So the idea of staggering tree replacement makes sense to me in the urban landscape. But this sounds like something, and maybe somebody could come back up, that may or may not be able to go forward unless and until they're replacing all the trees. So
we'll pose that question.
Okay.
I'll pose that question. Okay, so let me clarify. I've got a question for staff on clarification.
If they propose to remove the other six trees, if there's eight in total, and propose to move the other six, would it come before us without an appeal?
They would be posted just as these were posted, and if someone was to appeal it, then it would come here. So that the posting doesn't come here first. The posting goes to the residents 300 feet within 300 feet and then on the tree as well.
But the permit would be issued for the tree removal without the Planning Commission's review if there was no appeal, correct?
Correct.
So if the appellants didn't file, then it would never have come to us, and it would just have been a director's approval, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So the next six trees could get approved that way?
Correct.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification. And then re-clarify for me that is this common area, is that the trees are in the common area. Is this common area dedicated as a right-of-way to the city, or is it an encroachment permit for the city, or how is that handled?
It's in the right-of-way, so those trees are within the right-of-way. They were, as Phil was mentioning, they were on the plans, they were going to put them in the sidewalks, and for whatever reason, they put them behind the sidewalks. I don't know if they were trying to minimize sidewalk damage or not, but they're still, because they're in the right-of-way, they're public trees.
Okay, and they're having an agreement with the city to maintain the trees from this point forward?
Correct. Their Adopt Morro Bay agreement maintains that area and then part of the bluff area in the park.
Have they demonstrated any evidence support their claim that these trees are damaging the retaining wall at this point?
Not that I've seen.
Okay. Okay, so could we have somebody from the HOA that would like to speak as their representative? The public comment is still open so that Susan can ask that question. Susan?
Sure, I'm Lori.
So will you be able to go forward with the landscaping plan before all the trees have been removed? I mean, will these two trees allow forward movement with that plan?
The initial and logical way to go about re-landscaping the area in a most efficient manner would be to remove the trees, remove all of the plant material, regrade all of the dirt and the soil, and install new trees, new plant material with drip irrigation, very specific to the requirements. We had the landscape architect do the full plan so that we had a large overscale on it with an ultimate goal. We were advised that there might be a lot of kickback if we were to ask to have all of the trees removed at once. And yes, we understand that. And I would be on the appealing side if I didn't know all of the details behind it all. It would be most efficient if we did it all in one single project. I know that one of the previous speakers addressed cost. As part of this project, we are not expecting the burden to be on the city and the taxpayer. We would like it to be done in our time frame with landscaping, and we've offered to pay for the removal and replacement of the trees as part of this project. If we remove two, the plan is to then go ahead and proceed with our landscaping, but we will be having to work around the other trees that are there. The plan keeps some of the plant material away from the base of the trees, knowing that either by choice or by Mother Nature, those trees are likely going to be coming down. So we plan to do the best we possibly can working around what else is there. Personally, I have a little bit of concern that we Well, let me back up a little bit. We did a survey amongst all of our homeowners, and one of the resounding opinions was that they liked the uniformity and consistency of the landscape look. But in order to create a little bit of variety, so we didn't have all the eggs in one basket, we chose two different trees and staggered them in the replacement. I kind of like things a little bit consistent myself. I'm a little concerned that we take two, and we have a Catalina cherry, and we have a Toyon, and then we have the Melaleucas down the road, and there are two pine trees that are there that no one, I don't believe they were planted with the original required landscaping. So one option would be to go back in with Melaleucas so that there is some consistency. The other is to recognize that the Melaleucas have some problems, and if the other varieties are better, you know, to continue with our plan. So does that answer?
Yeah, thank you.
Answer the question.
Okay. I have a question. Have you communicated or sat down with the appellants to try to work out your differences in on a one-to-one basis?
I personally haven't. I have not met any of the parties involved. I don't know if other members have, any community members. That was, you know, one of my first things is there any way we can talk about this? And we were told that Betty had come in and reviewed all of the material that we had submitted. So, you know, we'd be happy to sit and talk. And what we'd like is to come with a win-win. What we don't want is to be sitting here on hold for another 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. So if it means that we need to do, you know, a couple of trees at a time so that we don't make an immediate massive impact, we're willing to do that and work around it. My opinion is if it's obvious that these trees were never planted right to begin with, they are a problem, they're not typical of all of the other trees planted throughout the city, because they will pose a danger because of the roots and the way that they were planted. My opinion is it's better to bite the bullet, take them out, get new trees in. We would plant larger trees so that we could get the benefit of the maturity as soon as possible. And I think that within about 3 years, you probably wouldn't notice that anything had been done.
Okay, have you had an arborist submit a report or to examine trying to remedy the situations that are there with the existing trees?
That was part of our initial, for the first arborist, that's what we were had commissioned them to do, is to what can we do? So basically both have declared it's too late. They weren't done properly to begin with. They pose a hazard. You really don't have a solution other than to remove them and replace them. I believe that in the past, one of the other homeowners may be able to clarify, but there was one of the trees that had been attempted to be propped and resupported, and it eventually came down anyway. You know, verbally, it's not in any of the reports, but one of the Greenvale arborists verbally explained to me in this girdling, he says it's basically once the tree is root-bound or has started growing roots in a spiral pattern, that the tree basically develops a memory, and those roots will continue to coil in a spiral pattern. So they were planted incorrectly to begin with. The developer planted them as part of his master plan, and I would love nothing more than to say we have fabulous mature trees all along there, and we can just plant different flowers and do different irrigation around it. But we don't want to put the money in knowing that there is such a hazard that exists.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any further questions?
I guess in listening to all the discussions tonight, it struck me that the initial request was something that was a maintenance issue about two trees, but now it seems like it's more of an aesthetic thing that you want to replace all the landscaping as well. So
no,
what's driving
more,
it?
It's more that the landscaping project is a fact. It's going to happen, even if we remove no trees. That's going to happen because we're trying to reduce water. We've had irrigation breaks that have gone on for days, and we need to come in with a drip system. That was what started the process of, okay, what's the most efficient way to go about doing this? And because the trees are a hazard, we said we don't want to embark on this project without getting clarification from the city of what they're going to do about these trees. So that's where it started, and that's where we asked. Okay. So we tried to be most efficient about it by coming up with a master plan for the area. And in our budget, we're ready to proceed with doing that. That is not the motivation for our request to remove the trees as aesthetics. We love the trees, we love the birds, we love the bees, we love the hummingbirds and the butterflies. We really do like all of that. We are not on a mission to obliterate trees. We're on a mission to create as healthy, long-term, stable environment as possible.
Okay. Any other questions? I just have one other question. Okay. Go ahead, Joseph.
I'm still troubled by this. As I read the report, because there's a frequent mention of the hazard represented by these trees, and I grant you, if there were a total of 8 trees at one time and 2 of them have already fallen down, there's a very strong suggestion that there is something wrong. But I am struck by the, I have to say, fact that 2 trees have been singled out as distinct hazards, but with respect to the other trees, I don't find anything in the file that says that they are sufficiently hazardous as needing to be removed now. And so,
Joseph, I think we had clarification on that, is that the arborist report was for the trees, for those trees in totality. That was my understanding from what staff said.
Well,
so
I,
that they weren't singled out.
I understand that the arborist said that these trees are not thriving, okay, but that's
right.
Not the same as we have to remove this tree because it represents a danger to property and person.
So let's pose that question. Which trees were deemed hazardous by the arborist?
The arborist report, in fact, there are photos that they identified the trees by number and went, you know, this is the problem with this tree, this tree, this tree. They took images, and between the two arborists, you know, they're all addressed. In our master plan, I did personally, I went and I surveyed and I took pictures and looked at each of the trees. And when we made the decision to try to go about this in a more segmented manner, I chose the 2 trees that seemed to be in the worst condition and the most hazardous. So the tree at 455 Main Street is at a significant lean over the sidewalk. And the second tree is got a lot of the root girdling as evidence.
Okay. Jesse, did you have something? Okay. I have another question on a different plant material. There's a suggested agave plant for some of the landscaping towards the...
Yeah, there were, I think, just a couple of accent agaves on each end.
Okay, those have sharp pointy ends. And I don't think they're appropriate for next to a sidewalk where somebody may be skateboarding or riding a bicycle and could possibly fall into it. I think there's plenty of other plant materials that would not, you know, impale somebody. I think so. My suggestion is we'd get rid of them.
Okay, that's a very good point. Like I said, the landscape designer put those in and said, oh, those will be a nice accent. But
they're
right.
Nice plants.
There are other considerations to be made. I'm sure that we could find something something to substitute in that area.
Now, would you be amenable to do a continuance to a date either certain or uncertain, so that you could confer with the appellate to see if you could work out your differences to have a mutual agreement so we don't So it's a benefit for the whole community, and we're not ruling against one faction or the other?
Right. We certainly don't want to have to go through this process, you know, every time. We're definitely open to discussion. One of the concerns that we have is the time frame parameters that are set by city regulation as far as when you can remove mm-hmm. and replace trees. So we're dealing with a time frame in that we started this process, we actually internally started this process in the fall of 2018, and we're working through our landscape plans and everything. But if we don't meet this window, then we would be looking at a year from now delaying doing anything with the irrigation or anything. What we're looking for is basically a quick and definite decision.
Okay,
but we're more than happy to discuss.
Would a 30-day continuance be
Damaris,
out of the realm?
Would that leave us?
Nesting season, it is February 1st to July 1st, so or July 30, or June 31st, yeah, so July 1st.
Okay, so one concern is hiring contractors to do the work. And our goal was to complete all of this within the month of October, and we're already pushing it because Ms. Winholtz wasn't available, so it got kind of extended by a couple of months. So if the project got pushed to November for tree removal, there's not a time concern there?
Yeah, the nesting season doesn't start until February, so it should be okay.
Okay. Well, Jesse, do you have
one more question? And I'm the furthest thing from a tree expert that exists on this planet, so forgive my ignorance, but is there a difference in maturity levels in trees being planted? Like, can you plant a tree with a greater maturity level so it, you know, it's full grown at a, you know...
So, like, the size of the tree.
Is that what
I'm
sorry.
That's what they've talked about is planting larger trees. So our muni code requires at least a 15-gallon tree, but you can buy 24-inch box, 36-inch box trees that are much larger. They're not little sticks.
Okay, but so part of my experience with landscape tree removal and tree replacement is part of the problem is the larger the tree, the greater potential for root bound, and what we're seeing is the spiraling of the roots in the box that's there, and then also the smaller sized trees up to a certain point actually grow faster if they're put in their native soil than to try to put a large tree mm-hmm. in. You get less growth from a larger tree.
That is what I've been told also.
Yeah.
That it's a little bit misconceived to plant a much larger tree, and that if you look at the time frame for catch up, that a 15 gallon will be to the size of the 24 inch box within a year. And our biggest concern is hiring a company to do the work, that we have personal inspection of the plant material, and that they assure that we are getting non-root bound stock and stock that will thrive and, you know, has a good warranty on it too.
Okay, great. I think any further questions for the HOA? Okay, thank you very much for your Ms. Winholtz, would you like to come forward as the appellate? And if we have any questions, any questions? Okay, I have one. Would you be, thanks for coming forward, so I got to ask you something. Would you be willing to meet with the HOA, meet with the representative, to see if you could mutually come to an agreement on this in the next 2 weeks, 30 days, something like that?
I'm glad to meet with them, but I'm wondering where this falls in terms of violating the Muni Code, which I think is your decision. So where she's perceiving or think there's hazard, we believe that there's not hazard. So if you want us to sit down and talk about that, or really what's this 8-tree plan, it sounds mm-hmm. like that's what this is really about, not just the 2 trees. Is
yeah,
that right?
And, you know, also on that agenda, I think, would be a replacement tree species that you could mutually agree upon. either, you know, either one or two, in case we rule for them.
May I say something?
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm also struck by the reality that there are two purported experts, arborists, who have said that these mm-hmm. trees represent a hazard. And on your part, mm-hmm. it's your layman opinion that the trees don't. You can see our difficulty here.
Not if you know who the arborists are. Can I be that blank, that frank?
You did. Okay.
But that's...
Well,
and I think Ms. Bass made that statement. You know, when you hire somebody, you expect a certain outcome. And I think that's what's happened.
Well, I guess what I'm suggesting is I would have been much more pleased if you could have presented an arborist expert opinion contrasting to the arborists that were presented to us.
With some recommendations for the solution to the problem. So that if we're to rule that the trees are to remain, mm-hmm. then we would need a remediation to assure the city that they're no longer hazardous. So right now, we're, you know, from my point of view, I'm trying to rule mm-hmm. from an expert's opinion, and you know, and a liability and a point of fact mm-hmm. that we've already had two of the eight trees come down.
And actually, it's two of ten eight's still standing, and
so
the two came down. They did not replace them, and they did come down during unusually severe storm year.
Which
they were both in 2017.
Yeah, which we may see again. And I've seen this tree type, you know, fail in windstorms before from certain branches from these conditions. So, mm-hmm. so we have a 20% failure rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not so sure that I would be comfortable risking life and limbs on that accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have an appellate with you. Did you wish to have anything to say? Okay.
First of all, it's a question of money. As a resident that's not exactly flush, the onus is on us because these things are administrative permits are very prevalent now. And there is no chance for us, the public, to opinionate on what these projects are unless we spend $250. Now, if they're going to do these trees by twos, does that mean that every time that administrative permit is issued that we have to spend $250 in order to have a voice in our own government? It's very chilling to the public when these administrative permits that cost $250. We used to have these issues before the Planning Commission that we could find out about them for free. That's not the case anymore. And then on top of the $250, you're asking us to get an arborist to voice his opinion for us, for what we want him to say, for probably $450, because I have paid for such an arborist report in the past, and I know that's what it would cost in order for us to buy an arborist opinion that coincides with ours. We have so many photographs of trees around town. The ones at Delmar Park School parking lot are so explanatory. These trees do not crack curbs or sidewalks or retaining walls. They were planted wrong. We'll agree to that. That needs to be taken away, those
The trees would thrive. They look pretty darn good right now. You can't tell the difference between those and many of the other ones that have no irrigation whatsoever.
Okay.
But it's the cost.
Okay, you're repeating your previous arguments, and I appreciate that.
If you do this by piecemeal, I mean, it's the wrong thing to ask of residents to have to pay for a right in the governance and the development of our own city.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, at this point, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Does somebody want to comment, or let's see where this goes? Susan, you're up.
Thanks a bunch. You know, it's really sad because, you know, and thank you for the pictures that you brought in, because looking at the pictures, you can see that these trees, if they're done right, can thrive in an urban environment, can be surrounded by concrete and asphalt and do okay. And you can really see the difference in these pictures from this area where they put this girdling thing around it, and you can see what the roots are doing, and they're very different from the ones in these pictures. Hmm. And I'm not an arborist, so I don't know, but I can see these roots on the surface. I can see this girdling effect that's happening and that kind of strangulation of the trees. It's really sad. Also, these larger branches that look heavy and whether it's still possible to prune them, I don't know. So, you know, I do feel like they planted these trees incorrectly, whoever way back when did. And so, you know, whether they're almost... it's a necessity to go in and do something about it before there's another hazardous fall. Yeah, I can see that point. I can also hope that if we were to go through with denying the appeal, that we would certainly make sure that planting of healthy and appropriate trees follows this process. So I don't know. It's a tough one.
Okay. Jesse.
Yeah, I definitely see both sides of this. And I definitely can see myself voting both ways. So that being said, I would like to see some sort of resolution. I would like to see the paper barks go back. I think changing species isn't right for that area. That's just my opinion. I think if you're going to take a couple out, you should put them back the way you found it. Minimalist kind of thing. You know, leave it how it was. I'm kind of confused by the arborist reports. The very four first words is trees overall appear healthy, but then he says at the end, but you should cut them down. So I mean, it's kind of misleading. I would like to see an arborist report that possibly the HOA is paying for, but that the appellants have the right to choose who that person is. I feel like there's a disconnect here where, you know, we have claims that the arborists are kind of a pay-to-play thing, and I don't like that. I don't like that the appellants are having to pay $250 every time they come in. I don't like that they have to pay to participate in their government. I don't like any of those things. So I definitely see both sides of this, and I definitely am not comfortable with the idea that we're going to see all eight of these removed at some point. In a staggered fashion, it sounds like, you know, by denying the appeal, you remove two this time. You know, we're doing this four more times at a cost of $1,000 to the appellants. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair at all. So I am truly conflicted.
Okay. Joseph.
Likewise, I am too. This strikes me as an occasion where I would apply what I usually call my stupid test, which means if you could think of a scenario in the future where two trees having fallen over and two arborists saying that these trees represent a danger, and then something untoward does happen and someone is injured or some property is injured, and they would come to me and say, well, why did you decide not to remove the trees? I would not have a good answer. On the other side of the argument, though, is that these trees belong to the community, and they grow accustomed to seeing these trees, and they fall in love with these trees. And I'm sure the community would like to see that tree in some fashion replaced. So if these trees are removed, I would like to see the grounds re-engineered so that that tree can be planted in the correct fashion. And I am very sympathetic to the appellants having to open their pockets to get to this kind of a hearing. And I'm embarrassed by the suggestion I made that I wish they had presented another arborist's opinion, because that's simply laying another expense on them. I'm not happy with the way this thing arose. And it does seem kind of a restraint on democracy at its, at its purest level.
Michael.
Yeah, I have family over in Los Osos, and one of my favorite drives is to leave South Bay Boulevard and cut through the state park around the edge and come up North Main. And that whole sense that Morro Bay has this tree nature, you know, we've seen the state park have to cut down so many trees because of blight and the drought and the age of some of the trees. And then you hit the city, and the city took great risk to purchase, you know, the top of Eagle Rock, Cerrito Peak, hoping that that can be placed in third-party hands to save the canopy up there. And so now we're down at the bottom where we exit the state park and below Cerrito Peak, and we have this beautiful set of landscape architect-designed areas there with trees that have a couple problems. And so, like my colleagues, when I looked at it the first time, I thought, well, as Joe calls the stupid test, how can we possibly look to uphold keeping two trees that people have said are dangerous? That's our first responder main path through town. It's a major exit path. There's a lot of people on that road. You know, it's not like it's in a tucked away in a corner of the city subdivision somewhere. And then I get the sense that, wow, we really look at something holistic. You know, this is the whole landscape plan for the subdivision being changed. And that doesn't seem to be in the appeal or in the original application at all. And that's where I totally lose connections. And my sense is I don't want to see anything done till we know what the plan is for the whole thing, because we've invested city time in that before. Some of our elder statespersons who have seen so many changes were part of that, you know, forestation of that subdivision. And I think some of the things in the new general plan, you know, I've asked several times that we need to be able to bank large tree locations somewhere. You know, I'd like to not replace these. I'd like to replace them here and have two more somewhere else for every one of them done. You know, and we've talked about why can't we bank trees somewhere on the get some arrangements with the, you know, the school district. You know, help reforest the high school grounds, help reforest the edge of the elementary school that goes unused. You know, the trees in Del Mar are aging. There's places in Del Mar Park that we could put more trees. So I'm all for reforestation in certain aspects of the tree. So I'm reluctant to uphold the appeal because of the danger issue, but I'm also reluctant to deny the appeal because I think there's a larger issue about the aesthetics of that whole landscape around an area that's at stake. So I don't know if that means a continuance to help reframe this thing or not, but I don't want anything done beyond those two trees without seeing something back here that's a holistic landscape plan. And I don't understand why, if these trees thrive in so many places, and I walk in Del Mar Park all the time and see many of these examples that are included in here on Ironwood, And, you know, those trees are in great shape, and they are beautiful. And a lot of the things that are getting replaced aren't. They're insignificant compared to some of these things. So I'm very torn on this as well.
Yeah. Okay. Like everybody else's comments, this is, I hate to see a tree go down. I hate to see the process have transmuted into an effect where we thought we had a, where I thought we had, if more than two trees were coming down, that they, it would have to come before the Planning Commission, especially if there were street trees. And if this was a new development, we would, if they were pulling trees out, we would have a 5-to-1 or, you know, 10-to-1 or 2-to-1 replacement value for the trees that do come down. And I don't see any mention of that at all. So, of course, they couldn't be replaced in their same location, but they could be placed in a into a tree bank or be, you know, to a location in on public parks or even state park. I'm sure they would like to see a few Monterey's replaced somewhere as far as a credit. So where maybe the solution is to have a continuance on this, to try to, you know, to try to address this holistically, to have the Public Works involved with it as maybe mediator or facilitators with the appellants and with the HOA association and their or their representatives, and try to come to an agreement that the community could support and the HOA can support and that we could support as a full landscape replacement. And quite frankly, you know, for the to the you know, to both sides, you know, on this issue, I would have to tend towards safety. I hate to see biomass of the existing trees reduced by new trees, but we also, our first obligation, I think, is to public safety first. And the 20% failure rate on these trees is not really encouraging. So how does the rest of the commission feel towards that?
I would be willing to agree to a continuance. I just don't know that there's a resolution to be had. It didn't seem like either party was.
Well, that's what I'm saying is I think we give them 30 days. We give them a set time period. If they can't come to a mutual agreement, then it's back to us to make the decision. Because that's where it'll come to us, and then it'll go to City Council.
My time's free. City's already paid for it, so well, whatever helps the community out.
Well, we get 50 cents an hour.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if I had to vote right now, I'd be willing to say I want to uphold the appeal, which would force the HOA to come back with a plan that was different. So if there's something about the larger plan that we're concerned about, that might be the appropriate way to go. If we want to keep, I don't want to see this larger component get put aside somehow.
I would like to see the phasing of the project delineated. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the landscape plan. I think that we need concurrence from all three parties, including the city, for the appropriate plan and the appropriate phasing. Have that come back to us, or else we have to rule on what we have before us.
What I would be most in favor of is denying the appeal, so that public safety is number one, but looking to Scott to see if we can possibly waive appeal fees on a next one should a next one arise, and then.
If we deny the appeal, we let them go forward.
We let them go forward and take these two trees out, but if and when they want to replace more trees or remove more trees, then they have to appeal again.
Which is a further expense.
And but if we were somehow able to waive those second appeal fees, and then, you know, have them bring us some sort of holistic plan, or let them know that we'll probably uphold the next appeal.
Well, I think that's where we're going. That's what I'm trying to do at this point, so that we can give a set time period so that that process can continue, so that they can take the trees out with, you know, if that's where it's going to go, that they can do that outside of the nesting area, and they're not, and they're, we're not waiting another year with another, with further a hazard sitting there for another year.
Right.
So that's my thought process on this. So, Scott, do you have any words of wisdom?
Punt.
I will note that the director that's referred to on the slide right there is not me. That's Mr. Leibick, who's sitting in the front row.
Mr. Leibick, would you like to opine on this?
So, I would, like I said, kind of deferring to him at this point.
We think I'm the director of public services, but we're not quite sure yet. We haven't changed the code. Excuse me. We have trees all over the city that, I hate to say, that are really near the end of their useful life, that will probably need to be removed or come down in a windstorm or come down due to some other disease bringing them down. We have a couple arborist reports that say these Melaleucas are in poor condition and are a hazard. If I were to ask our city insurance provider what I should do about trees that we've been told are a hazard, likely he would say remove them, because we don't want to pay claims from damage due to trees. I think everyone would be better served if we were taking down however many trees are a hazard at once, rather than phasing two trees at a time to be brought down. But what we've been dealt with is, per our code, it's an administrative decision. They requested removal of two trees. Two trees get appealed. That's why it ends up here at the Planning Commission. If you're asking my opinion whether these trees should be removed, I rely upon the reports of tree professionals, and they say they should be removed. If I was given that report, I would recommend their removal to City Council. We would budget and remove those. That's where we would go if the Homeowners Association was not willing to adopt this area, that the expense for these trees would be on the city. I'm happy to answer any other questions you might have.
Okay. Any further questions?
I guess part of this, too, is this came forward because it was only two trees. But now we know that they're considering the whole public area. And that's what's so concerning, because that's not a small project anymore. That's changing the appearance of the whole Main Street corridor through there. That's not just replacing two trees that are damaged. That's an aesthetic decision that was done with great care before, with trees off of the city tree list, that now is being implied as a failed tree or something like that.
Maybe the decision was granted with great care, but it doesn't appear that the actual execution of that decision was done with great care because of the way they were planted.
So Rob, according to the code, how many trees could be brought down in a year without any planning or administrative appeal or administrative directive?
By administrative directive, if there was no appeal, mm-hmm. every tree could be brought down in Morro Bay.
Okay.
There is no limit to the number of trees in the public right-of-way. Okay. There's a different set of rules that take place on private property, mainly on residential private property. There's a different set for commercial private property.
And we do not have a historic tree registration or ordinance.
We have a landmark tree, but for only those trees that have been designated by council. I think there's a handful of trees on that list. None of these trees are on that list.
Okay. Joseph?
I want to reinforce what Commissioner Lucas has said. I'm not familiar with the actual history of when this property was developed, but it seems to me a suggestion that the landscaping and the trees in particular might have been one of the major components of the design. And I'm sure it came before a planning commission. There was a great deal of discussion about it. And I think in a similar fashion, if we're thinking of a new design for that there should be the appropriate discussion and planning, and it should come before us. So however we design this decision, that's the result that we have to achieve, I think. And that hasn't helped with the solution, but it's helped me clarify my thinking.
Okay. I've made a suggestion. Where do you guys want to go? We need to make a decision.
I'm ready to make a motion to deny the appeal.
Okay.
Is it possible to do that and call this all one action so that if it does come forward again to remove other trees, it's considered part of the same?
No.
No?
Okay. If we deny the appeal, we deny the appeal.
Okay.
We could recommend, correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, we could recommend that the City Council refund the appellant's appeal fee on the next go-round, or however, you know, we can always recommend any fee being
but we don't
reimbursed.
We
right,
do
we don't
have.
we don't have the authority. We have the authority to recommend.
Correct. The decision whether to, you know, waive fees or not, or apply fees or not, is the sole discretion of the City Council.
And then, once again, if we deny the appeal, it's probably just going to go straight to the City Council. So it's probably going to take longer than the 30 days that we could get a solution, a negotiated solution, and a concurrence for going forward. So that was my thought process, too. So not only would we get the hazardous trees either remedied or removed as soon as possible, but we would also get a concurrence on the whole landscape plan, as both the phasing of it and the selections of the materials by concurrence that we would see coming back.
I understand that. I have trouble not taking the recommendations of two licensed arborists and a civil engineer.
Well, we would be, and there would still be. But in reality, I think, you know, it's probably going to get appealed to the City Council. So then effectively, it's still going to take longer then.
But if it's appealed to the City Council will be faced with the same question of the
yes.
expert testimony and the history of the trees falling down and the safety
yes.
of the city of primary concern. And also, I don't like the idea of our decision. Assuming they agree, the City Council agrees to have the two trees taken down, now we're faced with what will be the circumstances for the remaining trees, and unless there's another appellant out there who will appeal, then it'll never come before us. And somehow the notion of the remedy to this problem relying on some good citizen to appeal a decision of the director right. strikes me as
that's why if we you know for me if we had a negotiated solution
I agree yeah
we
but
would
I'm outlining that perhaps
yeah.
the
right.
Denial of the appeal is not the way to go.
Can I ask if we have the capacity, because of the information brought forward in the text of the original application as well as the appeal, can we accept the cutting down of the trees but reject the plans that are submitted as the design to replace the trees and require them to come back?
I don't believe that this is appeal of two tree removals. Unfortunately, the way this came forward doesn't reflect a review of a complete landscape plan. It's not really on the agenda.
Yeah.
I'm channeling our city attorney.
We also should probably have a second on Jesse's motion.
I haven't made the motion yet.
Yeah. Oh, okay, okay, okay.
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready to make a motion.
Okay.
Okay, so I'd like to suggest a motion then, you know, okay. Which I normally don't do. And we'll see if there's any support at all. So I would like to suggest a motion of a 30-day continuous or to the next, you know, approximately 30-day to the next meeting that would be appropriate for that, for and then to come back to allow the negotiation between the three parties, between the city, the HOA, and the appellates, to try to come to an agreement on both the landscape plan, the removal of the trees, and the replacement material, or the material for replacement of those trees, or the selection of replacement trees if those trees are removed. And if they cannot make an agreement, then it comes back before us, and then we have to make our decision at that point.
I would probably be against that, only because the rainy season's coming. We can expect storms in October. You never know.
Yeah.
We could get a hurricane barrel up the, you know.
Okay, so I would like to make that motion, and we'll see if it has a second. If it dies for no second, then we'll move on.
I'll second that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Let's have some discussion on that. Susan?
Why do you go to me?
Well, because I usually let you go last.
Ah, so thoughtful. I don't know if we're going outside of what we've been asked to do. I don't know if a month is going to make any difference in how people feel. I mean, I can't know that, obviously. All the parties involved would need to talk with each other, and I think with so many things, and this one is particularly challenging, there's no right or wrong answer to this. You know, there's opinions. We do have, as you said, some scientific, you know, folks who this is their job, who have looked at these tree roots and said these trees have reached the age where they can be healthy, and now they're moving beyond that. As they're getting older, they're going to start falling down, and apparently two already have. And we do, again, have these examples of these trees that can be healthy all over the city. These were not those. These, you know, whether it's because of the environment they were in, where they were overwatered with other landscape around them, because of this girdling thing they did around the tree roots. It would be nice if people could get together and talk to each other. That's always the best thing. I'm not sure that's going to help anybody feel any better about what needs to be done.
Okay, Jesse?
I agree with Susan. I think, based on what I've heard tonight, I find it very unlikely that the appellants are going to suddenly change their opinion of what they would like to see happen. And further, I mean, now that we kind of have a more broad idea of what they intend to do in the future, even more unlikely that an agreement can be had. It would be wonderful if we could. So, Ms. Wintz-Holtz and Mrs. Bast, if you can sit down and try and work this out, I'm all for it. I don't think that's likely, and I'm just unwilling to risk. Like Commissioner Lucas was saying, the main artery, you know, if I hate to see a tree go down, and then our fire truck can't get to the estate park if they needed to, so that would be very bad.
Okay, Joseph.
Yeah, likewise, I'm not optimistic that anybody's going to reach us an agreeable solution in a month's time. And I also have this question. What if the homeowners association, those property owners, had decided that they wanted to remodel that scape and there was no issue of diseased trees, what would be their avenue for accomplishing that? What sort of approval would they have to get? So assuming there was no issue of a hazard.
So if they wanted to rehab the landscaping and the irrigation system, there's a couple of processes.
And also remove trees.
And also remove trees?
Yeah, change them.
If there was no hazard involved and they were healthy trees, we would deny their requests to remove those trees. They weren't a hazard. And they would probably end up here on appeal request. That's the only way they could be removed, if they appealed that decision to staff's decision, Planning Commission, and requested removal.
See, I think the question of these two trees is just a rationale to redevelop that whole area, and it's using the wrong vehicle to accomplish that, or from my perspective, it's the wrong vehicle to accomplish that, and perhaps we should just sort of look through the fiction of that and look at the reality of what they're trying to accomplish, because I don't think that the two parties are going to come to a solution that we can't come to right now.
Okay. I kind of disagree with that a little bit. I mean, I can see landscapes need refreshing periodically. And as we're looking at water usage, the idea that they are looking towards more water-efficient irrigation makes a whole lot of sense. That they're looking at these trees and what has happened in the past with the two falling, and then looking at that root, having the reports say that the trees aren't healthy. I mean, I don't think it's... if they're planning to replace trees with relatively mature trees along the way, I don't think they're trying to get away with something.
Well, I firmly believe that they're generally concerned about the appearance, and they want trees there and attractive trees.
Okay, so let's get back to the motion in the second. Michael, did you have any comment on that?
No, I just want to say I'm a huge fan of property rights, but this is a public space, yeah, and a signature part of the town. It's not a, you know, lot in back of my house or something like that.
Okay. And I think the whole process is ridiculous, you know, the way it's come forward and the way it's worked, and I think we need a better process on...
Yes.
Public spaces should come before the Planning Commission, you know, for even a revamp of the, even if the trees were to remain, the landscape plan should come before the Planning Commission and not could just go through Public Works. But that's not what we have right now. So do you guys want to vote on the motion, or do you guys want to... Okay. Well, thank you for interjecting. So let's go ahead and vote on the motion then. Can you call the question?
That's
Mr. Revolution. Director.
There's a lot of directors.
Chairman Lur.
I vote yes.
Commissioner Lucas?
Yes.
Commissioner Stewart?
No.
Commissioner Marone?
No.
Commissioner Ngafia?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes 3-2.
3-2 for a continuance of approximately 30 days to a date certain. So what would be the next meeting on that, Scott? Do we need a date on that motion? Okay, great. Okay, hopefully you guys can work it out. And otherwise, we've got to make a decision. So thank you. Thank everybody. I want to thank everybody for coming out and exchange phone numbers. So, okay, thank you. Okay, moving on, we have item number C, which is new business. We have none. Okay. Thank you. Item D, we have unfinished business, which we have none. Planning Commissioner comments and future agenda items. I would like to bring up this one. So Scott, how do we, or in Mr. Leivick, Rob? I'm not denigrating Public Works design aesthetics, but I think the Planning Commission, it's our stated purview that is in our ballpark. And I would like to see future, right-of-way landscaping projects and tree removals, especially for anything over like a 6-inch caliper, it seems like they should come before the Planning Commission so that we could take a review of them on that. So, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, it's not something we do now. Yeah. It's not something the city's done in the past. The only time you ever see anything in public spaces is when we come back with master plans for, say, like a park or something like that, which makes sense because that'd be going through a process that involves a coastal development permit. So if we're doing things that don't involve a coastal development permit, it would be unlikely that there's a mechanism to bring things to you, meaning those types of things would have to be, pushed into our code that suggests that you have review authority, and then what is that review authority? Because honestly, and Rob, this might sound very simple, but it's very complex. Yes. The number of inquiries we get about placing things in the right-of-way is daily at the front counter. We have, and you're all aware of this, we have really wide right-of-ways in really narrow paved streets. So people come in and talk to us all the time about putting things out on the right-of-way. So where is the line drawn?
Well, it seems like on a major artery and a major public view. This is on their view corridor. Locations, that this would rise to the level. If somebody wants to put in a brick walkway or something, I don't think that's a real, on a small street in the middle of a subdivision, I don't think that's something that we need to concern ourselves. But one of the main arterial roads for Morro Bay in a view corridor, it seems like the public space, especially a complete remodel of the public space and the landscaping areas, should be something that we should at least have a look at.
If I may.
Yeah.
I work in a different jurisdiction, obviously, a little bit bigger, and I work at the front counter. So I can definitely second Scott's opinion on this, and that it would be very difficult to, A, delineate what we see and what we don't, and B, actually have it come to fruition. I think once they learned that this bureaucracy existed, they would just stop. It would stop the citizens or stop whoever from wanting to improve the right-of-way, and I think we would all be worse off for it.
I don't mind agendizing this conversation that you're having right now for a future time frame, because we probably can't get into it any more than you've already done right now at this point because it's not agendized. But there's not a lot of easy answers to this. The example that you had before you this evening that wasn't really before you, but they included the plan, so it was part of the package that you received. just has to do with replacing plants in the existing planter locations in a landscape that is very similar to what's out there now. And when I just looked at the palette while I was sitting here, and I was like, it's not dramatically different. It's drought-tolerant plants, probably more drought-tolerant than what's already out there. They're looking to change the irrigation system to drip, so they're using less water. I mean, those things are all positive things that you'd want to encourage. But again, I'm happy to, you know, maybe have a conversation. We could agendize this discussion and see if it goes anywhere. I can do that.
I guess the thing I would say is when we have special districts, we've got the Embarcadero, we've got the Bluff Road, the roads that come from the bluffs down, that's a special thing. You know, the Embarcadero is a special thing. We should have design guidelines that if somebody wants to challenge them or comes back and changes something again, I'm thinking the projects that are along Route 1 that are in the future down the line, north end of town, you know.
So we actually have something that does the exact opposite of what you're suggesting to do, and that's the Adopt-a-Place area in town that was referred to in this exact example that was before you. You know, they've agreed to adopt. This is city right-of-way, landscape maintained by the Homeowners Association, and they entered into an agreement with the city for that. We have these in other places in the city. And that was a process adopted by city council, and they want those types of things so we can have those places in town maintained. So the only point behind me bringing that up is we have a process now. You're saying you don't like that process and you want to do something else. Understand that the city council just recently adopted that process.
So I would like to say, and I'm sorry they all left the room, because I watched that process, and I think we should be very grateful to private homeowners who are willing to take on the financial burden in this city, which is going belly up, you know, in terms of, I mean, we talked about, we could waive the fees. Well, folks, we're looking at raising all the fees significantly, in a painful way. So when you get private homeowners willing to take on the responsibility of beautifying our city, keeping it safe, looking at trees that may be falling down, I don't think they were proposing, a Disneyland amusement park along the road. Like you said, drought-tolerant plants, replacement trees that are on the list. Certainly have seen that in the downtown where, you know, if I didn't take responsibility for the tree well in front of my shop, it would be a disaster of dog poop and, you know, whatever else comes along. So I think, again, when private people are willing to step up, I get that there's a challenge because then you are sort of maybe stuck with what they are going to do or not do. But we have the Adopt-a-Morro Bay.
Again, the only point behind bringing it up is we have a process in place that does something that would seem to controvert the things that you're looking to do. But again, I'm happy to I will schedule this for a future agenda in the fall, and we can have this conversation because it's not agendized tonight. We should probably stop talking about it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great what council did. I just think that there's going to be holes when you find the way things work. And one of the things is we've got a major city component that has no design review now over what happens to it, apparently.
I do believe you can. There's a distinction to be made between maintenance and redesign and a large multi-unit as opposed to a single, that small set where we're talking about redesign.
Yeah.
And
all great for that night when we have that agendized item.
So let's save that for the discussion. I think it's, thanks for agendizing.
We'll bring it back in the fall.
How are we doing on our new signs?
We are looking at locations. For wayfinding, Commissioner Stewart was talking about wayfinding. We do have the sign designs locked in, and we are looking at locations right now. I've been sitting down with Erica Crawford at the Chamber. She's about neck deep in Avocado Margarita Festival right now, so we're going to have to schedule a meeting hopefully next week to kind of go over those plans one more time, as well as Jennifer Little, our tourism manager. Once we come up with a solid location map, we're going to hand it over to Rob's folks to take a look at whether, you know, we've missed the the mark or not. I've been doing a little bit of that, but you know, it would be helpful to have some of our maintenance folks take a look at it for where we're looking to place them. So.
You know, I hate to add something into your mix, but I realized this last weekend that we don't seem to have very good signage for where City Park, Triangle Park, whatever is. I had so many people coming in and saying, where is this art in the park thing? We can't find it. And but they're coming in Main Street. And so we aren't directing them back up to City Park, Triangle Park, whatever we want to call
we
it.
We have some of those things on the Wayfinding Sign program.
Perfect.
I'd have to go back and look at it, but it is something we've you know looked at, pointing you to parks.
Jesse, you had a comment?
Just real quick, I just want to kind of very briefly summarize the Wharf CAC meeting that we had at 3 o'clock, Mr. Leivick and Mr. Casares. The WRF manager, program manager, was kind enough to do that. They did an excellent job. Very short and sweet. What I'll take away from that is the word amendments was kind of used in a way that I wasn't completely comfortable with. Most of these are so short story, business as usual. I think they're doing a great job. I think we're pushing forward. It's on schedule. Relatively on budget. And the word amendments was used in a way that was probably wouldn't be intuitive, as if we're changing midstream what's going on. And really what's going on is that the amendment process is being used in a phased type of in a way we would normally use the word phased. So kind of taking that back is that's what I took away from the presentation, which was awesome. Did a great job, and I think these folks are doing a great job, and I hope we're going to get this done quicker than not. So,
anybody else comments? Okay, community development director's comments.
I have nothing this evening.
Okay, great. Okay, so at this point, then we'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting at the Veterans Memorial Building, 209 Sur Street, on September 17th, 2019 at 6 p.m. And I want to thank the public for all of their comments and their help tonight.